Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Echoes in the Dark. The darkness within each of us needs an opportunity to be heard, understood, and embraced. So whether it comes in the form of a whisper or a scream, we will carry forth the poetry that expresses the haunting echoes within your soul. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that tonight's show, which is our dark poetry show, is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthology put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's going on?
Oh, well, I tell you, life all in all is pretty good. My We've been a little sick around here, but I'm starting to feel better. The teenager's still a bit down, but you know, she was actually tired enough. It was funny. She was tired enough to actually lay her head down on the kitchen table as soon as she got home. And everything I suggested making that to have for dinner, even like a smoothie, which is something she usually goes for when she's sick, she didn't want. And then I was like, well, how about some pierogies? How would you like some pierogies? And she went, yeah, that's what I want. So apparently pierogies was all it took to get her to eat something, which, you know, worked out well. But thank goodness we're done with rain for now. You know, it's still April and May, so there could be more, but at least we had 3 days worth of rain, and today, thankfully, none of that. So, but yeah, I thought that intro music would be very fitting, considering one of our main topics for tonight is the art of Utagawa Kuniyoshi, and his artwork is actually pretty recognizable as far as Japanese artists go. You know, he is one of the more well-known one. In fact, even if you don't recognize his name, you could look at his artwork. You could look at his artwork and, probably recognize it. I remember, like, back when I was a kid, my grandfather had this collection. Remember, like, when Time used to sell these huge collections of different books? I don't know if you remember that. I think they still might. But anyways, he had this big collection of books about different mythologies throughout history and throughout different nationalities and countries. And I remember the artwork of Utagawa Kuniyoshi being in some of that. One of the more well-known, I think, was the Ghost in the Lantern. I remember that one. But, but anyway, we do have a great lineup of dark poetry tonight. I don't know about you, but I always look forward to that. Of course, I look forward to any poetry, but there is something about the darkness that truly appeals to me. And we do have two separate things we're going to do. First of all, we have basically it was kind of like open darkness. We have one carryover. Then we have, I run 8 spots only contest with display of our darkness. Then we'll get into the Utagawa Kuniyoshi contest. And if I'm pronouncing that name, I do apologize for that. I, once again, meant to look it up, and I should have. But, somehow keep forgetting to do that. But anyway, great, great lineup of dark poetry. And, I see Robbie hanging on the board. Very cool to see him as always. And he says, being Polish, I dig the pierogi sentiment. Yep, they are good comfort food. They are. I've been trying to watch my carbs more lately, though, so I actually, for the first time ever, because I had the frozen pierogies, I read the carbohydrate content, and oh, good Lord, it's like 5 pierogies is simply, like, is basically a meal equivalent of carbs. It is crazy, Rex. Crazy, crazy. But good comfort food. All right, well, I guess whenever you're ready, we'll go ahead and get this ball rolling.
With Inner Demons by Naomi Sarah. That was yours.
All right. Imprinted on my mirror neurons, revisiting each shocking scene, replaying, replaying, on and on, haunting me even in my dreams. I relive each searing struggle from inside crazed killer's eye. I feel the break of bones crumble and hear the terrifying victim's cry. I feel the satisfying slash as the knife slits the throat. My knee becomes the killer, my brain smashed into a bloody bash. Satan speaks, unsettling me with questions. Is good bad and bad good? Are we all part devil and part God? Is every human cut, cleaved, and clawed, twisted, tortured as I fell, a distressed descent straight to hell? I see a dying victim's downward fall, hear their tortured trembling call, hear their frantic heartbeats filled with grief, pumping, pounding, offering me no relief. Senselessly seeking a remedy to silence my anguished identity. Fragments of me start to drift away. Pierced pieces of me turn to gray. I kill in vanity to find my cure. To this insanity I can no more endure. End poem. And this was a carryover from last week that was Open Darkness. And I have to say, I thought this was an exceptionally creepy write. Love how she went into the mind of someone going insane. Very cool. Rex, your thoughts?
Let's see. It is an evolver. It does go on that note of someone who can see through the eyes of the killer, whether it's through that note of precognitive awareness that walks within some people, the fact that they can actually live through the killer's eyes, see what's going on. And she does roll into that note from inside killers, a crazed killer's eyes. I feel the break of bones crumble and hear the terrifying victim's cry. And then she offers up that note. Is this part of her, are we all part devil and part God? That note of is she just as depraved as he is, because she can see this, feel this, understand it. She seems to be too much attuned, and within that tuning, she becomes the fork, trying to alleviate that note of peril that walks within her mentality. And in order to get rid of it, she becomes the killer herself. So it's a full evolved evolution from the initiality of seeing the conflict, understanding, knowing, and feeling it, and then walking in the shoes themselves.
I like that. I like that. And I can definitely see that. It's almost like the, what is that called, that syndrome where the people like sympathize or become attached to their captors?
Stockholm.
That's named after a city in Sweden?
Stockholm.
Okay.
Syndrome.
That's how my brain works sometimes. I could remember it was a city in Sweden, but I couldn't remember, you know, specifically. And but yeah, I like that, and I can definitely see that. But yeah, there is definitely somebody looking at themselves and seeing themselves transforming into the killer. I really liked the visceral imagery and the erratic thought to this. I thought even the fact that she didn't, like, at first it seemed like she had a really consistent rhyme pattern, and then she went away from that, and she didn't have a consistent stanza, format, because it's almost as if the poem's lack of a form represented the falling apart of the mind. And I thought there was great lines all the way through this. I really like where she brings in the part where it says, Satan speaks unsettling me with questions. Is good bad and bad good? Are we all part devil and part God? That kind of makes me think of the idea of the conversation between Eve and the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Did God really say, You know, when he asked that question, did God really say you couldn't eat of this fruit? Because it's oftentimes by making us doubt ourselves that you know, evil is able to confuse us. And, you know, and so there's this idea of her own, the voices within her head confusing her. Obviously, when I say her, I mean the character. I don't mean Naomi. But I love the way she went into this, how she transforms, as you were saying, from the victim to the killer, and the idea of how her the own mind convinces herself that she is on the correct path, that this path of violence and madness is the correct path. So, excellent, Dark Right, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
The Nightmare by Oren.
All right. And we do have a recording for this. So let me find that. And here we go.
The Nightmare by Orence. When whispers fill the dead of nights and blackened pines bend down, the moon lets off a rancid light. The nightmare comes to town. How heavy, heavy on your chest it swarms so darkly sharp. Then all the sins you've not confessed obscure the distant stars. There in your room the shadows break in shards of twisting ghosts. Your bedsheets weave a bed of snakes that coil around your soul. It writes the anguish in your heart. Each heaving breath is choked, an emptiness of writhing parts, all yearning to be whole. There's no escape from poison's drip until the sun's wrenched free, caught in the black one's dreadful grip as lamps die in the streets. So hang a mirror, clear and bright, ward off the nightmare's blight, the golden apple in the sky is full of worms tonight. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Orence, and thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And this was a 8-spot only pre-writes contest, so there was no specific topic other than that it had to be a dark write and preferably not recently in one of our shows. And I gave Orence the gold in this. I thought the rhyme and flow was brilliant, the imagery. It had been written previously to the painting The Nightmare by Henry Fuseli. I don't know, I just thought this had such powerful lines, great rhyme, brilliant dark imagery. I really like this all the way through, but especially there in your room, the shadows break in shards of twisting ghosts. Your bedsheets weave a bed of snakes that coil around your soul. It's that idea of the haunting games that the mind plays when you delve into the realm of nightmares. And I thought the golden apple in the sky is full of worms tonight was a wonderful way to describe the full moon, and you know, where you see the shadows in it, that, you know, the idea of, you know, a great description of the full moon, and also how it affects our mind, how, you know, you have that kind of lunacy that comes about on the full moon, that oftentimes I've read that it can affect your dreams the days when the moon is full. But yeah, I like how this speaks on the kind of darkness that slips within the subconscious. and great writing, very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it's all about light and dark. Since you hit on Dead of Night, you've got shadows, twisting ghosts, bed of snakes. You've got the coil around your soul. And that part about then all the sins you've not confessed obscure the distant stars. So there's a note of not following a religious penance, confession, as well as the snakes that coil around your soul because you have not offered up contrition in them for whatever transgressions that you've imbibed within. So there is a note to that in it as well. The Hanger Mirror, Clear Bright, The Ward of Nightmares by just take a look at your true self in the moment, which also comes right back to the confessions and the snakes that coil around the soul. But the last two lines, I took that as also the note to light and dark. The golden apple in the sky, for me, that's the sun. The worm is full of worms tonight is the opposite angle where the moon is that note on the back end, the worms being that which dip into your mentality because of your transgressions and the fact that you are not contrite in any way, shape, or form. So the poison actually invades the body enough to the point mentally that you start ruminating in on the darker side of things. So that note to be the golden apple, that offers up the thought to what daylight gives you sanctuary while the worms of the moon at night offer up the disease that lies within those nightmares.
I like that thought. That is really cool. Yeah, I haven't thought of that. So, awesome observations. And what do we have next?
We've got Terrors of Night by Jessica C. Wheeler. At night they creep to snatch in bed or while you sleep or in your head. They set apart and look to find can't stop their start when you're behind. Fear pounds the chest while drums parade. A helpless rest in dark you fade. A puppet's trance to move along. On strings you dance and sing their song. To take effect you must advise a redirect and backward stride. Now traveling the better path, unraveling of aftermath. Arrive at last, traumatic past. Of hallways past, stressed by the host. Behind each door is trauma's bloom to re-explore, trapped in a room. Without release, you face what haunts, no offered peace, night terror haunts. Abandonment, suffered abuse, a grief torment, a swaying noose. Betrayed, undone, a risk gone wrong, a hit and run, a trigger song. A mind enslaved, a loved one lost, a life not saved, a heavy cost. A war's time spent, you fear or hate, a past event, relive the date. Although we wake, each time we go, our lives at stake, we cannot know. But who's to say the dreams we fear won't hunt in day or keep us there? Still, I will quest and hope for peace. One day I'll rest if night trips come. Night just cease. This room till then, I'll shut my eyes to watch again each night she died. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex, and just an absolutely amazing dark write by Jessica. Brilliant imagery and metaphors, powerful emotive lines. I like how she writes about the darkness of the past, of suffering from PTSD, from past trauma, that which paralyzes the body and the mind and takes away that hope for happiness. I did like how after, like, this was a, it was a longer poem, but it didn't feel longer because the individual lines were shorter, and plus it just kept your, it kept your attention all the way through. But I like how halfway through the poem, she began to make the pattern, you know, like the stanzas wave, almost as if it's the wavering of your conscience, the kind of the idea of your mind falling apart. It almost makes me think of the idea of going into a dizzy spell, or the flailing of, you know, having night terrors. So I really liked that. You know, and there's great lines all the way through, but, you know, I do especially like abandonment, suffered abuse, a grief torment, a swaying noose, betrayed, undone, a risk gone wrong, a hit and run, a trigger song. And, you know, she puts a lot in those lines because there are so many different ways, whether, you know, it's a soldier come back from the horrors of war, or childhood abuse, or, you know, as she mentioned, a hit and run, you know, whether you're the victim or you've made a wrong choice in your life and you hurt somebody else, either way, that past oftentimes comes back to haunt you and takes over complete control of your body and mind. So powerful, Dark Rite, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Yeah, it is in that swaying note, the undulation that offers up the most, because it speaks to many angles of what night terrors bring. It doesn't matter what it is. Grief, torment, betrayal, a hit and run. That's a hard note. A triggered song, mind enslaved, that paints on the note of could be drug use. A war's time spent, your fear and hate, a past event you live today. The idea of that notion of reliving, re-dipping into that hollow which haunts so well. And although we wake each time we go, our lives at stake, we cannot know. Who's to say the dreams we fear won't hurt, won't hunt in day or keep us there? The idea of being locked within that evidentiary note to the point where it drives you mad. And that note to of seeking the night trips to cease. But until then, that note of what comes each night will be lived and lived once more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment, Rex. All right. And what do we have next?
Go on. The Night Fear by, I don't know if that's Lampia or Iampia. Not quite sure. But I'm going to go with Lampia.
Iampia? All right. That makes sense. Iampia. She can always tell us. She can message one of us and tell us if we're phonetically pronouncing it wrong. All right. And this is The Nightmare by Iampia. And it goes like this. I see the sun drowning in the blood-red twilight sea as the veil of darkness falls on the somnolent valleys. The black outlines of mountains deepen the night, and the ash trees of the old forest start whispering. I let my fingers trace the dying light of the day, watching the flickering shadows dance all around me, air redolent with the sweet scent of evening primroses and the heavy muskiness of bruised purple-edged hellebores. My tired body is drawn to the down-feathered pillows, the smooth satin sheets cool on my fevered skin. I rest my droopy head on the bed with a quiet sigh, and as an umbra of haze swallows my consciousness, there he stands, unmoving in a candleless corner of the room, draped in a shredded cowled robe made of hellfire murk and soot, a black silhouette poised to invade and overcome. Blurred incubus features a demonic face of graveyard gloom. His misshapen fingers are talons of a predatory raptor, hands like hard, crooked branches of the yew tree, stretching, elongating till he slashes my snowy quilt, lacerates my thighs, and scrapes red my shaking limbs. The lightning is a streak of blinding white outside the stained window. Thunder is the howl of an animal stabbed and ripped apart, pushed against the mattress by a will of iron and body of stone. I can neither escape the storm nor utter a raging scream. My chest is weighed down by the hell-born sleeping beast, breath imprisoned in my lungs, caged between the ribs, bones battered and crushed, blue welts angry on my skin, a magma of revulsion blazing and scorching my arteries. I awaken with the first crow of the rooster at dawn, the pink blush of the morning sky, thawing the ice in my veins, warming my frozen cheeks and my paralyzed body until I find the hoof marks on the floor, crimson trailing down my legs. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's colorful and it's noted detail. I like some languages wrote in this too. Hands like crooked branches of the yew tree. That's nice because the yew tree has always been what you use to make the wonderful longbows that were used 500 years ago. They were spry enough, strong enough to hold a 60-pound, 70-pound pole, yet still springy enough to make them the weapon of choice that kept their enemies at more than a fair distance, because you could place a shot and that arrow would fly, I don't know, 600-700 yards without much effort put into it. So there's a nice note for that fact right there, because she rolls on the next line, stretching, elongating till he slashes my snowy quilt. I like that line there too. Lacerates my thighs and scrapes red my shaking limbs. And then to start with the next one too. The lightning is a streak of blinding white outside the stained windows. Thunder is the howl of an animal stabbed and ripped apart, pushed against the mattress by a will of iron and body of stone. I can neither escape the storm nor utter a raging scream. And then the finish was, warming my frozen cheeks and my paralyzed body until I find the hoof marks on the floor, crimson, trailing down my legs. She works it out as waking from the dream. Yes, the dream is offered up as reality with the note of the incubus having been there.
Yep. Yeah, I did like that ending too. This kind of made me think of sleep paralysis also, but yeah, it definitely did bring in obviously the mythological elements to it. And I like that you brought up the yew tree and how it used to be made for bows. If I remember right, I believe both the ash and the yew tree are both have very magical properties and symbolism to them in ancient cultures, particularly in Celtic cultures. So I thought her choice to use those two different trees was really cool. And plus the way the yew tree looks with all the twisting and turning works really well to describe the hand. This is definitely dark, visceral imagery. And I have to say, one of the things that I find most dark and creepy about it is the lack of control, the inability to be able to move and breathe. And then the twist at the end where it's that realization, you know, you have that, the character has that moment where she wakes up, thinks it's all over, only to look and to see the hoof prints and the blood. You know, just a brilliant imagery throughout, wonderful attention to detail. I particularly like the lightning is a streak of blinding white outside the stained window. Thunder is the howl of an animal stabbed and ripped apart, pushed against the mattress by a will of iron body stone. I can neither escape the storm nor utter a raging scream. What an absolutely horrifying moment captured in poetic verse. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
We got Slices and Pieces by Owen Ezekiel. The movements of living are stopped by the barricades. Demarcated life and death, when griefs and sombers are sliced in pieces like a sharp blade that's cutting our throats in pieces and chokes, screwed us up, tied to tide. End poem.
Great read there, Rex, and what an amazing dark brevity. Only 39 words, but 39 carefully chosen words that paint a dark and horrifying picture of society. Amazing imagery and metaphors. This made me think on the grief that tears at the mind, that tears the body and mind apart. And it's really difficult to separate one place part from the other. But I have to say, I really like sharp blade that cutting our throats in pieces and chokes, screwed us up, tied to tide. I feel like the tied to tide represents the ocean to ocean, but also like so that some of this kind of darkness can happen to anybody, anywhere. But it also represents, I think, the movement of time and the idea of how difficult it is to escape childhood trauma. At least that's what I some of the thoughts that I get from it. And your thoughts, Rex?
The tide to tide for me comes with the idea of waves, the waves that are born with life and death, within grief and somber notes. What they come in waves. It's how the mind works, the waves of sorrow, pain, questioning, all those seven stages that one goes through. There's one wave after another until you walk past it. Yet some of those waves for the living don't ever get answered. So you still got that tide to tide, which you live with those waves long past the past due date on those that have already gone.
I like that, and I can definitely see that. Very cool, very cool. All right, and what do we have next?
Ode to Death by Violet Ink.
All right. The moon spits blood and stains the night, riptides churn in pain. I watch it bleed and bleed and smite, the sky tears down in rain. I smell the scent of howling death between the crackling leaves. Poetry gasps its dying breath in bouts of panting heaves. Like withered flowers, the words are strewn with winds that they stick to the pain. Like lurking ghosts, they stare and croon the song of death in disdain. Brick by brick, the sorrow piled, My poor heart throbs and races. Through hard stretched veins it beats and strives to keep with the rhythmic pace. Thrashed and scorned, I lie on earth, damped with Stygian sobs. Raven tresses blow girth to girth with gusts of scarlet drops. Wounded, wrecked, I draw the cross, then dig my own abode. With fingers dipped in burning blobs, I write my final ode and poem. And what an absolutely amazing dark rite. I always love the use of the word Stygian. Very cool. And Rex, your thoughts?
The opening, the moon spits blood and stains the night. Riptides churn in pain. That note, the moon spits blood and stains the night. There's a double angle there because you look at blood in moonlight and it doesn't churn in red. It is kind of, it's riptide black in its representation because of how the light doesn't give it the airiness of what you know as blood. It's just pure blackness in the moment. So I like that that opening light. The second one, I smell the scent of howling death between the crackling leaves, poetry grasses dying breath, and bounce the panting knees. Now that it's the note of mulching, how everything in the moment mulches. You can smell that death. It howls in a way because you understand winter is coming with the death of all those leaves. And then again, like withered flowers, the words are strewn with winds, they stick to the pain. Like lurking ghosts, they stare and croon the song of death in disdain. Again, that note to winter. And the back end kind of hits on the idea. Damp with Stygian sobs, raven tresses blow girth to girth with gusts of scarlet drops. Still, again, that note to the darkness of winter. You can draw out of this, but you can also hit on that note. I write my final ode. It could be the ode to death itself, literal, but metaphorically, you're passing the seasons.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this is a wonderful rite that can be taken. It's very layered that it can be taken in both metaphorical and literal senses. The idea that winter can be winter, it's the season, but it can also be the winter that represents the winter of life, or even the despair, the despair of the mind. I thought this had wonderful rhyme and flow, brilliant imagery, really haunting and visceral. I also thought that it had a great lyrical quality and spoke to me on the calling of death to the hurting heart, the idea that the heart that hurts so badly that it seeks that comfort, that solace of death. I also like how, I don't know if personification is the right word, but she truly brings death to life and does it with different senses. I smell the scent of howling death between the crackling leaves. Poetry gasps its dying breath in bouts of panting heaves. And I like how she brings the writing of poetry in there, almost as if it can be either like the dying of the muse, or it can be that last poetic expression that comes out when death is coming over the hill and over the horizon and reaching out its hand to take you away across the veil. So amazing lines and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
My Darkness by Blues. As the sun slowly sets, my eyes open wide, with the world covered in darkness, I no longer have to hide. I am a vampire turned inward, sucking myself dry, numb of all emotions, I've forgotten how to cry. I hit the door on a mission that has brought me to my knees, desperately seeking a potion that I hope my pain will ease. I come home in the still of the night with my best friend in my hand, and all my pain falls through a hole like an hourglass full of sand. A temporary reprieve from a lifetime of pain, hiding from reality, has driven me insane. With the coming of the sunshine, the glass runs out of sand. I put myself and the monkey to sleep until darkness comes again. As the sun slowly rises, I bid the world good night. I'm a boy living in darkness and a man afraid of the night, afraid of the light. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I like this. I like that this is a more realistic darkness, looking at the darkness caused and the pain of addiction. That one line, I'm a vampire turned inward, sucking myself dry, made me think of when show that we just had with Baudelaire, I am my own vampire, was one of the quotes. But yeah, I like how this speaks on how we are our own worst enemy. And we can have all the people around us wanting to help us, but until we want to help ourselves, there's just nothing that's going to work. I like how this speaks on an emotional and psychological darkness of addiction and the process and the slow, painful process of recovery. I really like, I can't come home in the still of the night with my best friend in my hand, and all my pain falls through a hole like an hourglass full of sand, a temporary reprieve from a lifetime of pain, hiding from reality has driven me insane. I thought that was a great reference to refer to the bottle as the best friend. The idea of trying to numb the pain, to escape from those memories and that abuse that one goes through, to try to numb the senses. So excellent emotive dark right and very well done.
Nice. Yes, it is all about addiction and how it ails, but it also points to the fact that one has to actually hit rock bottom, understand that note, and be willing to pull oneself out from that dreary conclusion. And the only way to do that is by actually hitting that lowest point in one's life. And from there, there's only one way out, and that's up, because you've already hit the concrete floor. So it's a matter of getting up and moving out, and still you have to hit that level first, admit to it, and then realize it and understand that if you want to live, you have to crawl out of that empty one step at a time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That is so true. Well, very true. I did notice that he put in his AN that he is no longer the person in this poem, this was years ago, and he has been sober and clean since March 31st, 2006. So I have to say that is absolutely wonderful, and congratulations to him on that. Very cool. But I'm glad he is, able to share this right with us. Very nice. And what do we have next, Rex?
The Lonely King by Blue Light 70s Band.
Oh, is it my turn?
Yep.
Okay, I'm glad one of us keeps track. All right, The Lonely King by Blue Right 76. Ripples danced in circles around, winds in every form did dance and sing. Waves seemed to always call, allure in wait, with flowers allure. Scents of beautiful herbs for cure, the fishes too jumped their part, the silent invite to walk in bold when swimming was just a sleeping word. The forgotten lesson of failure drew every lake and beach a story did tell, a pudgy fanciful me in days dreams, silent voices reaching out to touch, daring to conquer my intellect, to draw me in line like a piper's train. Waters were always a beautiful evil, where the shadow's king resided, waiting for his next quarry, not to devour and savor, but just to submerge in shadows and in black silence to befriend cause he was, 'cause he was lonely, scary, and teary. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
So this points to a different angle. This hits out on the religious nature of water, or some waters, so to speak. I can remember the cenotes of the Mayan people. They were held in high regard as being that the place where you could meet the underworld. They were offered up trinkets, even sacrifices, for blessings of the culture. So this kind of walks on that same angle. Where was it? Daring to conquer my intellect, to draw me in line like a piper's train. Waters were always a beautiful evil, where the shadow's king resided, waiting for his next quarry, not to devour and savor, but just to submerge in shadows, and in black silence to prevent cause. He was lonely, scary, and teary. The angle of this one is there are certain bodies of water that you're always taught not to go near because of what religious connotation they held within that belief system. So this does walk in that angle. There are some bodies of water you were always wary of because even on those hot, blistering days when you crave a dip, you don't go near these places because they reek of the primitiveness of what gave them life to begin with.
I like that. I like that. And I can definitely see that. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I thought this was a nice layered write. First of all, you know, it did have me thinking of some of the different, well, first of all, it had me thinking of a fear of water and then, you know, relating to different mythologies. I mean, I remember even when I was a kid, you know, the people were always saying the lake that we live by had like these giant fish, you know, which it probably did have some pretty big ones because there were muskies in that area, but not nearly as big as, you know, like people talked about. But, you know, but, you know, there's always, you know, there's that fear. When you're in water and you can't see the bottom, you know, and there's so much that is open to the imagination. And between the imagination and the stories you grow up with, you know, there's that way of, you know, contributing to the fear of the water. And I did like the twist at the end with the idea of the monster who just wanted to befriend somebody because he was lonely, scary, and teary. But I like how this is also a right of offering up warning of, you know, don't get yourself, it's almost like a warning of don't get into any situation. It's as if the going into the lake is a representation, a metaphor for going in over your head in any situation. And I like the reference to the Piper's train, the reference to the Pied Piper, almost as if following that the music of the Pied Piper or the music of a siren into the waters of the deep, almost the idea of following those temptations which call us beyond where we should be. So excellent dark rite and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Waiting to Die by Robert M.
All right. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
This is my recital of Waiting to Die. What joy often in short supply, diminishing the will to even try. I lock my stare with darkened sky, almost as if I'm waiting to die. Eyes now chained in umbral gaze of the silken warping dark displays, bolstering the maddening phase and welcoming the end of days. The solemn heart now beats in vain, thrumming the rhythm of tempered pain, thumping with mournful, gentle refrain, yearning for which it cannot attain. Miseries coalesce and multiply in the chasm where fears belie. In these depths I still can't deny that I am merely just waiting to die. Desires no longer can pretend, in the eye of truth it doth portend. Falsehoods, hopes, and love will rend, leaving the lonesome to bitter end. Unraveled are the wayward seams that housed and bound the inner screams. They fly free as fate now deems to carry out the death of dreams. Despair and contempt leap from each eye, yet my cries beget a silent reply. Crushed by sorrow I could not defy, that left me defeated and waiting to die.
Wonderful read and write there, Robert. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts?
Had me thinking of T.S. Eliot. This is how the world will end. This is how the world will end. This is how the world will end. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. That note of waiting to die, death of dreams, lonesome to the bitter end. I am just merely waiting to die, yearning for which you cannot attain. All those lines there, they're dark, they're gloomy, well, depressing, yes, but also that note to of loss of living in the moment. So it is that note of not with a bang, but with a whimper, because you're not fighting to live. You're just waiting to die.
Yeah. You know, I thought, yeah, that was a really good comparison because, yeah, comparing it to those lines from T.S. Eliot, very cool. I like that. Yeah, this is an amazing dark rite, powerful and emotive lines, brilliant rhyme and flow. As always, his recordings are just, you know, amazing. And I like how this speaks on, you know, the despair and depression that one goes through and wants the relief of death, but life won't offer it up. I really like the lines all the way through, but couple of the parts that really stood out to me was the solemn heart now beats in vain, thrumming the rhythm of tempered pain, thumping with mournful, gentle refrain, yearning for which it cannot attain. It is a sad but true reality of so many people's lives is we just hope over and over again for that which we cannot have. I also really like desires no longer can pretend in the eye of truth it doth portend. Falsehoods, hopes, and love will rend, leaving the lonesome to bitter end. And the idea that the cruelest thing that life does besides dish out one trauma after another is that it does not allow the grieving heart to find some sort of comfort. So excellent, Dark Wright, and very well done. And thank you for sharing that with us, Robert. And what do we have next, Rex?
Echoes in My Brain by Ed Hunter. In my younger day, I was very much a radical. Breaking through dawn, I experienced situations unlike kids today. I played baseball, football, basketball, and street hockey. Kicked the can, Hong Kong, hubcap game, knocking on doors, and of course, soaping car windows. Growing up was exciting. School? Okay. Getting hit by the nuns was so much fun. The 60s were considered a new revolution of the swinging era. However, the culture decade became a lesson in life. The world has gone mad, surrounded by the ever-turbulent, cold-hearted, and unpredictable hysteria. A dawn of the golden age that never materialized. The Cuban Missile Crisis, Nigerian Civil War, Vietnam, and the birth control pill. It's the market. Protests, protests, and more protests. Fidel Castro, Kennedy's, Johnson, Nixon, Mao Zedong, Nikita Khrushchev, Leonid Brezhnev, Martin Luther King Jr., I Have a Dream. The assassination of the Kennedys, Martin Luther King Jr., and Malcolm X. Firebombs bursting, boarded up homes, students getting escorted out of school by the police, throwing gasoline-soaked toilet rolls, getting jumped on a sunny day, getting jumped on a cloudless night, rocks, sticks, and matches. There's going to be a nuclear war. People are stacking up with food, building shelters. Decaying of social order, sex, drugs, rock and roll, the British invasion brought us the Beatles. The space race. How could we not forget the USSR and the United States launching satellites, space probes, and finally the United States Apollo 11 moon landing? Charles Manson and his family of followers, disaffected young lost followers to kill at any moment. The Zodiac Killer that inspired the movie Dirty Harry. The Boston Strangler. Albert DeSalvo, who murdered at least 11 women in the Boston area. What more can a kid ask for?
Great read there, Rex. And what an excellent write by Ed Hunter. And we have gotten into the writes inspired by the artwork of Utagawa Kuniyoshi. And I like this one. It's unexpected. And you know, sometimes unexpected can be nice because, you know, you look at that picture with the people and the large skeleton. It's almost as if the skeleton represents in Ed's poem the personal history of darkness that watches over mankind. I like how he brings us through not only his personal journey, but the journey of a nation. Like, although he does only mention the 1960s, I almost feel like from between the first and fourth stanza, it's like the transformation between the ideology, the 19, it's almost like that transformation from the 1950s childhood to the 1960s teen and young adult, where the world starts going through a lot of major changes as far as social and political, and there's so much darkness that you're starting to see within the world. I mean, you know, obviously darkness has always existed, but all of a sudden, you know, it's like this, the young mind that is growing and maturing is being thrown into this mist of chaos. Wonderful historical references in the mention of Fidel Castro, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Mao Zedong, and all that, and the assassination, the firebombs bursting, boarding up homes, students getting escorted out of school by the police. I mean, and so visceral, so raw and honest, really a deep look at some of the most horrifying times in history, and yet at the same time, a point in history where we were starting to kind of grow as a nation, and yet at the same time as we're growing, in some areas, we were falling apart in others. So amazing, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the picture reminds me of Grateful Dead Skeletons in the Closet. Great album. This does walk a tone of the 60s, but it does also hit on that where it's I couldn't know. Anyway, there are some allusions that you can draw on in this that that walks within today, because it seems to be the rush is back on, especially that sort of a nuclear war, people stacking up with food, building shelters. You know, that's going on. You've got some of the richest people in the world building underground shelters in New Zealand and Australia and spending gaudy amounts of money in putting together 5 to 10,000 square foot settings, complete with pools, saunas, and everything else they can imagine to their heart's desire to keep them safe below ground. The note to the Adorn of the Golden Age that then materialized, yes, I think a good part of that was those assassinations that started with Kennedy and finished out with Martin Luther King and Robert F. Kennedy on the back end of the 60s. You got that note to Manson and the family of followers at the back end, Zodiac Killer. There was and that note to inspired the movie Dirty Harry. Everything seemed, pointing out the note, everything seems to avert itself in November of 63 and comes full circle today, because everything is being pushed within a narrative angle. The movie's pushing out the idea of these notes to Dirty Harry, or there was a bunch of Charles Bronson movies back in the late 70s, early 80s, Death Wish. That culture of violence eagerly seen in the movies and on television, yet also transferable to modern life easily. The idea of we forget about Castro and Mao Zedong, the sort of Nikita Khrushchev, Stalin, and what they did. You know, Mao Zedong and Stalin account for somewhere between 100 and 150 million dead people of their own within China and Russia from that angle right after World War II up into the 60s as they imparted their totalitarian idealism. And the first to go in both angles of that were the academics. You got rid of all the smart people. Why? Because you don't want smart people telling you you're doing it wrong. You got to do it wrong and be doing it wrong with the stupid people running the show. So, let's see what else we got here. The notes of the space race. Hey, back in 62. There was a proposal of Khrushchev and Kennedy were putting together of actually building themselves a note and going to the moon together instead of holding that space race, sharing the cost so it wouldn't be such an impasse and a heavy note to both countries. He wanted to offer up that shared note with a handshake, and people on both ends didn't like that, in Russian as well as American, which would be part and parcel of why he ended up dead in November of 63. Yes, that his angle, his election, there was that thought of Eisenhower warning him, be careful of the military-industrial complex. It is growing strong to the point where it will take over. Yet there was one more thing lurking in the back end of that, and that was the corporate industrial complex, which would marry up with the military, thereby making themselves even more stronger where we live today with them.
Absolutely. Great observations there, Rex. Very cool and wonderful information you shared. I thought at first you were going to say that painting reminded you of an acid trip you had back in the 70s or something, but, you know, I wonder if Ed also thought of the song or the album cover by the Grateful Dead. Is that who you said? The Grateful Dead, right? Yeah, I think so.
Grateful Dead.
But
Skeletons in the Closet.
Yeah. Skeletons in the Closet. I wonder if he thought of the same thing. That was really cool. Really cool. All right. And what do we have next?
Comatose by Time Poet.
Death eyeballed
That's
him
yours.
With him. I actually had that one figured out. But thank you, just in case I didn't. Comatose by Kind Poet. Death eyeballs him with impatience, waiting to catch his exhausted soul with its bony mitt. Today abounds with hope. Tomorrow allows more chances. Doctors are helping him heal while his family prays for his priceless soul. Illness drained his dreams, but not his endurance. He won't succumb to death until his dying mind demands his demise. He intends to battle death until death is defeated. He screams inside his brain as the infection boils within his bloodstream. He stares death down with bold defiance, although he dreads an insecure future. Must he live in endless poverty if he survives? He will accept an impoverished fate if it means that he will live. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Reminds me of Dylan Thomas. Do not go quietly into that good night. The idea of fighting to your last note of breath, the last beat of heart, the last twinkle across the chasm of the mind and mentality, not giving in to the ease of succumbing to that which will eventually come, but doesn't mean it has to be today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep, we all have our time, but that doesn't mean you necessarily have to make it easy for the Grim Reaper. Yeah, I liked this. Had a lot of heart in it, and as you were saying, Rex, it is wonderfully philosophical with a spiritual edge to it too. I like how it speaks on how oftentimes we learn the important lessons in life when we're facing death, when we're facing the possibility that we are coming to the end of life, and we start thinking about what's truly important. And I do like that that especially comes through in the end, which I feel like for any poetry or story, it is always most important to have the lesson at the end, where she says, must he live in endless poverty? If he survives, he will accept an impoverished fate if it means that he will live. And I like that because it's that realization that, you know, while it's nice to have money, sometimes it's just as important to have the other blessings in life, such as family and friends, or even, you know, your health, the opportunity to live yet another day, another year, another decade or more, you know. And but I really like how bring in the darkness of having to face death, and especially but doing so with, you know, like your shoulders held back and a sense of, you know, like I won't be defeated. Illness drained his dreams but not his endurance. He won't succumb to death until his dying mind demands his demise. So the idea that he's going to put up that fight. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rick?
The Bells of Joan Shoja by Captain Kerr. I am water, churning beneath melting snow, falling from cusp of mountain, crushing with thunderous fall. I am wind, beginning like scented breeze, traversing lands and kingdoms, unrobed by typhoon, laying them in ruin. I am a fire, patient among dry brush, a seedling spark consuming all with insatiable appetite. I hear the bells of John Shoja ring and tall grass whispering before the gate. I am Taira Kiyomura, warlord of the Heike clan, and against Minamoto, the Genji, I have made my stand. The eastern winds and arrows sing while the Sala stands flowering against the gate. I rose to power, skilled in the way of the bow and the horse. My father, Shigemori, taught me the code of the samurai. I am fevered these many days and wait and see snowfall and crystal ponds beyond the gate. An opaque moon to rise in vagrant suffering when evening coats the bloodied sand. I dissolve into an elegant hate where the merciless rancor thrives inside the gate. Pale-lipped warriors sigh, falling like shadows in the night, proud faces grimacing, frozen in the light. With sword of my forefathers, I hone my fate and rush into the rampage and pleasure, charging the gate. Cherry boughs do not show in mountainous height. Until time of bloom, how beauteous they appear. I hear the bells of John Shoja ring with my body shuddering beneath the gate. End poem.
Great read there, Rex, and what an absolutely brilliant write by Captain Kerr. Wonderful storytelling. The painting, one of the subjects that Utagawa Kuniyoshi wrote a lot about was the samurai warriors, which was one of the paintings that Captain Kerr chose. And I like how he speaks on the strength of the warrior and the connection that the warrior has to nature. I really like how he starts with the first three stanzas with, I am of water, I am of wind, I am of fire. It's just like each element represents a different sense of movement and a different force within the warrior. Wonderful attention to detail, great storytelling. I really like how he was very It has a very classic feel with the use of Japanese names and words and places, and a great first-person narrative about a warlord's rise to power. I really liked this all the way through, but I especially like the eastern winds and arrows sing while the solace stands flowering against the gate. I rose to power skilled in the way of the bow and the horse. In the way of the bow and the horse actually makes me think of the Huns and of like Attila the Hun, and how they were and still are a very horse-centered society. I know the Huns are different than Japanese, but I'm just saying what it made me think of. And I also really liked with Sword of My Forefathers, I honed my fate in rushing to the rampage and pleasure, charging the gate. Powerful lines there, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Okay. The first three stanzas had me thinking of Sun Tzu, The Art of War. You'd be like water, you'd be like wind, you'd be like fire. And in those notes, you take reference to how things work in the moment. You never engage an enemy when it's defeating itself. Appear weak when strong, and appear strong when weak. You show that those partitudes that offer up a note to how, before the battle is ever waged, you already know whether you've won or lost. So the victor is already known in that angle. So the sort of this is actually a true tale. The Bells of John Shoja. Gets it right with the Minamota and Tairaki Amore and the Heisei clan of the Genji. And the note, the gate, is the important part because he comes back referencing the gate. When the Sala stands flowering against the gate and sees snowfall and crystal ponds beyond the gate, where the merciless rancor thrives inside the gate and rush into rampage and pleasure, charging the gate, and then the finisher with my body shuddering beneath the gate. That note, it hits on the idea of the sacrifice of oneself for your lord and master, which samurai did fight for someone. They were the highest of the high when it came to that angle, and they were proud, well-trained, and they stood in purpose and in note to all those things. But the idea with the crystal ponds, the snowfall, the mountain in sight, the time of bloom, all of those notes to beauty fall within the natural order of how they looked at things in nature and how nature affected them, and they could take notes from nature. That walks quite well. The note on the back end of this, shuddering beneath the gate. There's a note in standing tall and prideful in fighting through the last of who and what you are, giving your last true essence to your Lord, in bringing down the this was two factions, two warlords back in the day. One powerful supremely, and the other one looking to unseat that. So there's that angle of walking forward in time, because you can't keep running things the way they are. It's the downfall of the powerful and the rising tide of those beneath, or the lesser clan.
I like that. Very cool comment there, Rev. I particularly liked how you... you had a lot of great observations there, but I particularly liked how you brought up self-sacrifice and the pride of the samurai warrior. Very cool. All right, and what do we have next?
Uh, the familiars that keep me up at night by Hope's Home.
All right. Good to see you right by Hope. There is no rest for a woman like me, for at 3 a.m. and a quarter past 6 is when the dreams began. Sun-bleached skulls with horns that Fibonacci himself crafted, a hat to fit a high priest, that wicked spiral takes me as she pours vows on my noggin, polluting the pollen down the rabbit hole of mirrors and faces, dead husband and a smoking lover who's afraid I'm going to kill what he loves within. Dead rotten pecan tree, maggots and cats feast on the hollow amber bark. On the center of the trunk sleeps the impaled, decaying cow carcass. All of this and more as I toss and turn, throwing pillows to the floor with eyes tightly shut, haunted by family ties and blood red wine that cursed veins for 7 generations forward. For protection, culture, greedy green eagle, or to feed the pet alligator, which jaws, clenches my brittle bone as I wait for the snap from the cesspool of a mind reprobate can manage to choke on while I long to dream of Eden with you. I wake to the shadows of the familiars licking my fine linen, tasting the panic. Here, kitty, 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 end poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
The heavy is the brow that holds the crown. Kind of hits on that one. There is no rest for a woman like me. For at 3 a.m. and a quarter past 6 is when the dreams begin. Sun-bleached skulls and horns of Fibonacci. I like that note. Fibonacci himself crafted. A hat fit to a high priest. To fit a high priest, that wicked spiral takes me as she pours vows on my noggin, polluting the pollen. Is a note to the graduation into that class of upper echelon leadership that walks you into what you've been trained for, yet you don't get a real grasp of it until you've actually in that venue all at once, down the rabbit hole of mirrors and faces, dead husband and a smoking lover who's afraid I'm going to kill what he loves within. She offers up that note of dead, rotten pecan tree, maggots and cats feast on the hollow amber bark. There's a picking coming from everyone around her. So she's not really happy, safe, or of a mentality that does not preclude her from being paranoid. That's what I get with that. And the note of curse for 7 generations forward. And then that note, she longs of a dream of Eden with you. And the wake the shadows of the familiars licking my fine linen, tasting the panic. Yeah, kitty, kitty, kitty. That kind of hits me up with the idea of the back end of it. She's already strode over that note of panic. And is willing to kill those around because she senses they're closing in. And the only way to get rid is, kitty, 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 come on, off of the hands.
Yeah, exactly. Great comment there, Rex. I really like how this speaks on the many different thoughts, the kind of the panic and the anxiety that takes over the mind at 3 a.m. in the, and the spiraling down to the rabbit hole and how we think about our past and our future and even the present. It all meshes together to become this representation of the horrors and death of life and the person that we want to be and the person that we're afraid that we'll become, with the mention of the seven generations curse, the idea of that curse passed down from one generation to the next, whether it's, you know, addiction, drinking, which I kind of, with the reference to the blood red wine, I kind of get that idea, but I also, you know, just get the idea of trying to get out of that familial trauma and move forward and become a new person, become, you know, leave the hurt of the past behind and build a new future. I really like the emotive power within these lines and the dark visceral imagery. And I also, I thought where she said was, for protection, culture, greedy green ego, or to feed the pet alligator, which jaws clenches my brittle bone as I wait for the snap from the cesspool of a mind reprobate can manage to choke on. The idea that I like the representation of how our own ego and greed, but also our own jealousy, because I feel like the green and the color green and the green of an alligator kind of represents jealousy and how all those negative emotions can tear us apart and keep us from reaching our goals of bettering ourselves. So, excellent dark right and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
My Sad Eyes by Lee Fayette. You saw my sad eyes. You heard my imagination. You had to see. I am prepared, comfortable. I traveled so far to be here. Now, survive. I peel back coverings to the roar. I limp around from the scars, a three-spoke wheel. Anger went rocket when your grip loose. Anger took hold in owning my remnant. My coping control turned to rotten wood. My me slipped away, lacking presence. My life, strings kept contact, finally snipped. Thee, for the first time, saw me. Thee let me go, unknowing to face my true end. Thee here to help, fine desk, just a check. Acceptance to the flame plan so pure. Acceptance to take me wherever, not here. Poof. And poof.
Great read there, Rex, and powerful emotive lines on healing and self-acceptance and the pain of recovery, the pain and journey of recovery. I really like the imagery and metaphors of I traveled so far to be here, now survived. I peeled back coverings to the raw. I limp around from the scars, a three-spoke wheel. Anger went rocket where your grip loose. Anger took hold, owning my remnant. Anger truly is, can be powerful and overwhelming in the way that it can take over the body and mind. So excellent right and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I'm going to go with, it's not just the sad eyes and the anger. There's a note of being betrayed. You had to see I am prepared comfortably. I traveled so hard, be here now, survive. I peel back coverings to the raw. I limp around from the scars of three-spoke wheel. That admittance of being broken, peel back coverings, unloading in the moment. So this is about mental health, seeing a psychologist, or one or the other. And my coping control turned to rotten wood. My knees slipped away, lacking presence. My life, strings kept contact, finally sniffed. There's a note of the betrayal comes right there, being being let go, when the note is comfortable up top, with the ease of uncovering raw truths, noting the idea of being broken with that spoke wheel, yet be here to help, hind desk, just a check. Ooh, that note, you're just sitting here for the money, and you're letting me go when I might be on a crucial point within our conversational tone. Acceptance of the flame plan so pure, acceptance take me to wherever, not here. There's a push off. Poof, the idea of all that effort, all that work, all that conversation was for shit. Because you just put me out in the cold.
Absolutely. You have great observations there, Rex. And yeah, betrayal hurts, but it especially hurts when, like you said, words were completely wasted. So, excellent comment. And what do we have next?
We have Renegotiate My Price by Beatrix McCobb.
All right. Worked my time away all night today, paradox of my life, to provide for the little ones I created, birthed, and held, that expelled from my inside. 75 years of my life spent not in stride, as I huffed, ached, and withered, broke beneath the weight of my mind, reeling on easier ways to survive. This husk, blood turning to dust, lungs puff smoke, and out cough choke crimson, on napkin white, now red rose. I will not bend to this weak end to tie a bow atop my wretched head. So I did something a fool off a cliff blind, tails rounded towns, edges of a place, through the twisted vines, up the endless stairs, stories high atop the mountains, past a cherry blossom tree, lies a witch within a shrine, who trades souls for favors, deals, gaunt bell jest. I made that pilgrimage, went up old, came down beautiful, stunning. She granted me 5 years to run under the sun, wild and young, full of color and joy. But she told me that this day she would deploy her hounds, take me to her, and my soul wrenched from my rinds, grinned and smoked in her voodoo magic pipe. At the time, I didn't care, but here now I hear them barking, clawing at the door. Paws crackle, leaves outside, inside everything covered in boards. They want me. They will have to work for it. That much is in store. Abruptly creeped upon my door. Shadows ran on the floor, but no physical creature dwelled to hit or find, purchase. Specters, gremlins, crowds surfaced me out in the pale moonlight. Expanse and I struck with fury and blows, but air is all I felt on my knuckles and fingertips. This was it, my finale. Through the vines, up the stairs, and past the cherry blossoms, they tossed me at her feet in the shrine. She looked eye to eye, asking if I enjoyed her gift. I winked with lips curled as I relinquished a blade from the bowels of the underworld in a holster on my wrist and sliced through that bitch's throat. Out bellowed black smoke, her skin ribboned, rolled ash and flowed away into the night. Though gone, still echoed her cacophony shriek of the mountain. I hear it even now. I spent my 5 years learning how to cut you down, end poem. And what an absolutely epic dark rite. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, first, the song, The Hounds of Hell, Robert Johnson. He wrote that back in 1931, I think. Recorded it. But all hell hounds. And how when you make the deal and the time comes, the hellhounds, you can hear them coming. And she hits on that note within this piece, clawing at the door, paws crack of leaves outside, inside everything covered in boards. That idea of willingness to offer oneself up for that youthful contract of years, even though she's already hit on the idea, she's 75 years, so there's a double note to something a bit more, because she's heard the stories and how there's an easier way of doing things by giving up your soul to the voodoo queen for whatever you want and however long she gives. But the idea on the back end, she didn't run around within that youthful vigor and such to enjoy life to its fullest. She went in hunt, in search for knowledge. And that knowledge on the back end was the how to fight off and keep the dogs at bay while succumbing to the gremlins, the ghouls that would eventually deliver her to the queen, and the essence of how to get rid of that queen. So it does hit on that note of the protagonist who's hit rock bottom and has found a way to crawl out, yet in the end gives themselves up in the moment. Because you know what, once you've killed off that enemy, that sense of the one who gave you the magic to begin with, you will once again be returned to the natural order of where you were 5 years previous, except now you're 80 years old. So it doesn't follow the normal protagonist path. This kind of walks up that note of willing sacrifice to save the rest of the towns around the area, and willing to offer up that note because of age, as she has already lived a long life.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment, Rex. Yeah, I thought this was just brilliant storytelling, wonderful dark imagery. I, too, had thought of Robert Johnson and, you know, make the idea of how, and other stories where, you know, make a deal with the devil and eventually the hellhounds are sent to collect what you owe. But, and when I say the devil, obviously I mean a devil in any form. It also kind of made me think of the Little Mermaid, not the Disney version, but the original version, the idea of striking up a deal, and, you know, the idea of like the mermaid or the water spirit Undine looking for love, but and then being destroyed at the end. But instead of looking for love, it's that idea of just wanting that little bit more time. But it's almost, it's interesting because there's the main character isn't per se a bad person, but it's almost as if she's a person very wrapped up in her ego, as if her it's her desire to be young and beautiful that drives her to make a deal with this wicked woman. And I liked the imagery. I liked the way she wrapped the storytelling up. And I thought that the twist at the end where it says, I spent my 5 years learning how to cut you down. There was almost as if, while it was all wonderful storytelling and can work on that level, it's almost work on a metaphorical level for the idea of youth taken away by evil within our own lives. also excellent write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Enigmatic Dread by The Atlantic. Anxiety is a plague. It's the Anxiety is a plague. It's the bag of spinach you buy and swear you'll finish this time before it rots in a drawer. It is a man on a tightrope crossing between two skyscrapers, blindfolded, left to intuition, left to animalistic instinct for dependency of life. It's accidentally attaching the recipe for banana bread to an email instead of your resume and cover letter, the one you spent meticulous hours on. It's also attaching your soul to another, vulnerable as a tree, fresh cut and bearing its rings, let it tell you of life through ripples in its wooden body. The precursor is not just anxiety, but newness, fresh, ripe uncertainty, holding on to a fool's standard that we get everything right first go. Unknowing, we our own scapegoat. The undoing has marbled itself in, we'll fetch a higher price as the butcher, that is, if we're tearing ourselves in. Though this meat is tender and raw, it will stay that way with a bit of salt. The worry that made you now becoming bits of cartilage and bone, tiny fawn that can't yet walk, droopy saplings, we know little of the Reformation. Could you put a price on your life? How would you formulate its sum, and is everyone held to your standard equation? Some say there's much to live for. Others agree to disagree. My cost simply depends on the day. End quote.
Great read, Rex, and what an absolutely amazing write by The Atlantic. Brilliant imagery and metaphors, clever wordplay. Anxiety is a plague. It's the bag of spinach you buy and swear you'll finish this time. I feel like I'm being called out for all the bags of spinach I ever threw out in my life. I really like this, and I like how it starts, the way it starts with the first couple stanzas, because anxiety is that idea of even the simplest of decisions makes you feel as if you're walking across the tightrope, makes it feel as if you can't trust yourself, and that any little mistake is the end of the world. And there's great lines all the way through this, but I have to say that it's the second part that really spoke to me. Unknowing, we are our own scapegoat. The undoing has marbled itself and will fetch a high price at the butcher. That is, if we turn ourselves in. And following all the way through, and the visceral imagery in that, and the ugliness, and the raw honesty of how we truly are our own worst enemy. Set on self-destruction. So excellent dark write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Anxiety, it's about fear and the predisposition to perpetuate a formulaic angle which covers all things, yet will never cover all things. That last stanza in the first piece offers up that note. The precursor is not just anxiety, but newness, fresh, ripe uncertainty, holding on to a fool's standard that we get everything right. That's the idea, the angle. No one ever gets everything right on the first try. That's where you fail and you do again. Fail, you do again. You keep doing until you get it right, and then you understand that note of how you got it right, and you move on to the next thing. Most people can't live on that angle, and that's where anxiety comes from. That's where fear is engaged, because of the newness, the uncertainty in things. Why? Because they don't fall into a registered pattern of what you want things to be. Life doesn't walk on a registered pattern. There are too many uncertainties, too many outside normality. The unknowing, we are our own scapegoat, truth in it, yes. The undoing has marveled itself in we'll fetch a high price at the butcher, that is, if we turn ourselves in. The idea is the marveling itself is always a safer, tender cut of meat. But here, we fetch a higher price at the butcher. The idea is we are on that level that we think of ourselves. We catch a higher price in how we're paid. So we think more of ourselves in that moment, which is what he gets to in the last bit. Could you put a price on your life? How would you formulate it? Some. And is everyone held to your standard equation? In other words, are you honest? Or do you equate the person next to you or the person 1,000 miles away the same way you equate yourself? In other words, are they as worthy as you think yourself are? And the back end, my cost simply depends on the day. There's more even note in that thought. You're going to be at points high and low. So you might think of yourself, yeah, I'm not really worth what I'm getting paid today. But tomorrow, you might be thinking you're paying me twice, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. Very cool. All right. And what do we have next?
Afterlife Diptychs, Trick or Treat by Eric Svensson.
Afterlife Diptychs, Trick or Treat. Oft I ponder, coy fish meander through ponds, tangerine dreams. Dreams glide, mingle with red post box flashes, soundless from the outside, until our master parts emerald weeping willow tresses, like heavy theatre curtains shoved aside, to see his heart's delight meander, salamander slow, in quick silver liquidity. Poseidon poised, landlubber he, peers into our looking glass pond, searches between green lotus leaf spreadsheets, his solar plexus brightened by our canary yellow scales, tries to hear what our coy mouths verbalize. Afterlife, beloved master, we coyly lip sync, diptych duality days dances, your triptych of mind, body, and soul. Little tom tit tally your willow. Tit willow, tit willow, is it weakness of intellect, birdie? Deeds done between reeds, tangerine dreams, dreams glide, mingle with red post box flashes, canary yellow gut insights caution. Emerald green heart fields yield, yet quake when suit black despair sets in. Beloved master, be at peace, our quicksilver sunlit streams bequeath breath away with midnight hours, poltergeist scribes, harangued hills. Reprimand scripted calls, banish killer Kazushi accusations, black squid ink saturates brittle rice paper, kamikaze cull all misgivings. Afterlife diptychs, trick or treat. Present life triptych, mind, body, and soul. Infirm.
Wonderful read and write here, Eric. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And we will have a few carryovers, just giving people a heads up before we comment on Eric's poem, that will be carried over to the next dark show. And Rex, your thoughts on Eric's poem?
Well, I got to go with afterlife diptychs. And that's a nice trick or treat. The idea of the diptych is the two-sided wooden panel for painting. The afterlife diptych offering up heaven or hell, trick or treat. Nice tone there. And then he rolls in into triptychs with the mind, body, and soul. I'm going to go with the idea that he's also running that triptych with the sense of the Holy Trio, God, Christ, and the Holy Spirit. So there is a note to, where is it? His beloved master, be at peace. A quick silver sunlit stream, bequeathed breath, away with midnight analyst, poltergeist, strives for anger. The idea of following the right path, the thought of the koi fish, and where would it be? Tries to hear what our koi mouths verbalize. So that there is a Poseidon being the god of the underworld, landlubber, he peers into our looking glass pond. There's a quiet note of taking on one angle while offering up the thought with diptychs, the thought of what comes afterwards, while in what should be on the tips of minds of everybody isn't just that diptych. It should be the triptych, mind, body, soul. In other words, the Holy Triad.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I thought this had such brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on that veil between the living and the dead, and trying to find that sense of peace within, as you were saying, body, mind, and soul. I like how it speaks from the mouth of the koi fish, and from nature itself, and speaks to the idea of someone observed who is trying to find that sense of peace, that sense of balance. I really like the bird call that he put in there, and I also really like the imagery of black squid ink saturates brittle rice paper, kamikaze call all misgivings. Wonderful lines and very well done. And great show tonight, Rex. Thank you as always. Thank you to Robbie for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to join Fill My Eyes and Company for Open Poetry, 10 p.m. tonight. And, of course, make sure to check out all of the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone. Have a good night, Rex.
Good night. Good night.